welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. We've got Rick and Tony in the house today and a lot of fun news to cover. This is going to be an interesting episode. Let's just jump right in here. So I'll play the video real quick and then we'll talk about it. Saylor had some comments on Bitcoin banks.
If there is more Bitcoins held with these third-party custodians, what risk does that pose, having greater supply held by fewer large institutions? Does that increase the risk of seizure and confiscation like we've seen with gold? And is that not exactly what Bitcoiners don't want to happen?
No, I think it's the opposite. I think that when the Bitcoin is held by a bunch of crypto anarchists who aren't regulated entities, who don't acknowledge government or don't acknowledge taxes or don't acknowledge reporting requirements, that increases the risk of seizure. You have an OG crypto community that's very hardcore about it, but if you look at where all the money is, 99.9% of the money is actually in the traditional economy.
If you consider the Great Depression, I mean, people thought that their gold was safe in banks until the executive order of 1933. So we're not entirely safe. I mean, I know that's kind of a wild thing to suggest may happen again, but history does repeat itself. So yeah, People's Bitcoin wouldn't be entirely safe.
It's people not say that, but mostly it's paranoid crypto anarchists that say that, okay? Because it's a myth and a trope that goes on over and over again. But first of all, he didn't really seize the gold. People voluntarily turned in the gold. They didn't go and kick in everybody's door, arrest them, shoot them, and take their gold. That never happened. Is the United States on the Bitcoin standard?
Maybe we will be soon.
But the point really is we're not. Mm. Right? It's totally not a reasonable comparison. You know, people have these inflammatory, you know, tropes or inflammatory memes that they use. And it's like, I say that because I want you to give me your money. Okay? Like, if you don't trust the bank, then you'll buy my hardware wallet. If you don't trust this government, you'll move to my country and you'll buy a passport from me. That's the kind of fear-mongering to get you to give me your money, right? And I use it to sell you a gun, to sell you a hardware wallet, to sell you an account, to sell you a financial advisor, to sell you an insurance policy, to sell you a, you know, fill in the blank.
Alrighty, Rick, I'm going to pass the baton to you first. What are your reactions to Saylor's comments?
Yeah, thanks for that, Michael. It's a bit of a hot potato on Twitter this week, right? Like, this is really sort of, this has set everybody on fire, hasn't it? And sort of divided Bitcoin Twitter a little bit. Yeah, it's interesting. So, you know, I did the right thing and I sat down and I watched the whole interview. And, you know, as is usual, there's loads of stuff that Michael Saylor was saying that I agree with. We've said it on this podcast before, right? Generally, he's been good at promoting Bitcoin and building awareness for it. But some of his comments were really interesting, right? And I think that's why Twitter's gone so crazy. But, you know, he sort of suggested that... Well, first, let's be really fair to Saylor, right? When he first started talking on the podcast about crypto anarchists, I think what he was actually referring to more than anything was that, like, you know, FTX and SBF, like holding your Bitcoin with those kind of custodians is a really bad idea because they were unregulated and a bit casino-like, right? So it was almost inevitable that you'd lose your money. And he was sort of then suggesting that, you know, but if you put your Bitcoin in banks that are too big to fail and have significant importance and BlackRock and all this sort of stuff, that you diminish that risk. And hey, look, you know, on the surface of it, yeah, I think, you know, BNY Mellon is probably a safer bet than FTX based in the Bahamas. So I don't really disagree with him there. However, you know, the conversation went on then to say, well, you know, is it a problem, you know, outsourcing your trust to banks and letting them custody your Bitcoin? And I think from my point of view, maybe he downplayed the risk a little bit too much for me. You know, he was pressed, the interviewer said, well, what about like a 6102 event? Like when they, you know, put that executive order out to sort of ban private ownership of gold in the US. And, you know, he sort of said, oh, well, it's not the same thing. That was voluntary and all this sort of stuff. Well, you know, I don't think you can call it voluntary when it is an executive order. You know, the clue is in the name. And the reality is, like, not everybody complied with that order, right? Like, only 75%, I think 75% or somewhere of people didn't go and swap their gold in for dollars at the time. Now, you know, the crazy thing is that shortly after taking the gold and giving dollars to people, right, they then revalued the dollar. So they were getting like $20 an ounce for the gold that they were asked to swap. And then later it was revalued to the $35. Now, at first, not everybody was really bothered because they figured, well, I can still use these dollars and go and get my gold back, until they couldn't. And really what Roosevelt was doing was devaluing the dollar, right? Now, for a lot of people, what's really happened there is the government has just extracted a huge amount of economic value from you, right? Like, there's no other way to paint that sort of description. Now, I think Saylor was trying to argue, well, it's a bad comparison. So he was suggesting that, well, Roosevelt only did this because the dollar was on a gold standard. So if he wanted to revalue the dollar, he would have to take the gold. And I think his argument is that, well, we're not on a Bitcoin standard, therefore they have no need to confiscate the Bitcoin in order to revalue the dollar. I have a couple of issues with that. I think the first one is that, well, we're not on a Bitcoin standard yet, right? But that could absolutely happen. And when the gold was sort of seized in 1933, if you'd have had any gold in an institution, right, with a third party, that's when your gold was taken from you, whether you liked it or not. Out of all the people who didn't comply with that executive order, what was common amongst all those people is they'd self-custodied their gold. So they got to keep their gold and they didn't get debased and didn't have it revalued and lose a load of money in that trade, right? So it kind of, that whole thing kind of suggests that self-custody is the better way to go here, right? So I think that's maybe not represented particularly well. And for people who want to learn more about that, if you go to the Mises Institute, they've got a really good article on there called The Great Gold Robbery, which I think does a really good job of sort of explaining what really happened there and might make people think twice about whether governments will confiscate things and whether that's, you know, in your interest. And where he really lost me, I think, was when we got to the point where he suggested that, like, hardware wallet manufacturers are just trying to sell you these products based on fear, right, of confiscation. I think that does a real big disservice to these companies. They build useful tools. You know, the whole point of Bitcoin is to give you choice, right? You can choose to put it in a custodian if you want to, or you can choose to take custody of it yourself if you want to. Now, I don't see any harm in someone building products for someone who wants to choose to do that. And the cool thing about Bitcoin is that it allows you to do that and to reduce your counterparty risk to zero. And personally, I don't buy the argument that just because you keep your Bitcoin in an institution that's too big to fail, that you're safe, right? Because, I mean, we could spend hours on this podcast talking about all the different ways that banks have stitched you up and screwed you over. I mean, cast your mind back to 2012 or 2013. If you were living in Cyprus back then, the government did a bail-in and just took 40% of your money, right? So, you know, for me personally, I would never, ever put my Bitcoin with a third-party custodian. And the last thing I'll say on that is I don't think that's paranoia. I think based on all the evidence of government seizures, of banks being untrustworthy, I don't think this is paranoia. I think it's prudence. And go and read the white paper. You know, I think if you ask, was Satoshi a paranoid crypto anarchist? I think you'd probably come to the conclusion that maybe he was. So, hey, look, you know, I think self-custody is the way to go. And man, if you're chasing 5% yield on Bitcoin when it's about to monetize everything in the world, then you're out of your mind and you're trying to pick up pennies in front of a steamroller, and it's not worth the risk, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. If I could be charitable to Saylor, one thing I'll say is that I think he could be correct that there will be demand for Bitcoin banks in the free market, whether us crypto anarchists like it or not. I can see a use case. I can see people wanting to pick up pennies. You know, they'll take advantage of that if it is presented to them. And a lot of people will probably pay the price. Some people might, you know, get lucky and they don't pay a price. I think the disservice to Bitcoin is that we are still at a stage of it in its evolution where one can buy and custody base layer Bitcoin on their own today. And, you know, in a few years, 5 years, 10 years, I don't know what the timeline is. I think we reach a point where, you know, a lot of people are going to have to enter via layer two. And that's where you're not really taking self-custody. You don't own UTXOs. And who knows what the world's going to look like then, and what the solutions are going to be to support those people. He mentioned some fringe cases of, you're going to have people who are, mentally incapable of managing their own Bitcoin. I get all that stuff. But again, I think today, in light of where we are, it's a disservice to assume that just because someone's offering a product doesn't mean that, and they could make money on that product, doesn't mean that that product is bad, or doesn't mean that their philosophy for why that product exists to begin with isn't very sound, and we shouldn't take advantage of those products. And and we at the Bitcoin Way only support and recommend a very small handful of products because we think that only a small group of companies are doing this the right way. So yeah, overall, appreciate Saylor's probably, his probable net benefit to Bitcoin, but I think he's off the mark here, or at least prematurely promoting quite inferior custody options. Tony, what are your reactions to that?
Well, man, there's so many angles that you can tackle this conversation that he had with. Overall, just to make the record clear, I think overall Michael Saylor is a net positive for Bitcoin in general. But I've been listening to him for a while, learned a lot from him along the way, that's for sure. But one thing that I did notice is that his conversation, his message has sort of changed since when he first started up talking about Bitcoin up until now, and not in the right direction as far as I'm concerned. He's sort of toned down his message about the whole freedom, self-custody, be your own bank thing, and sort of like flexed more towards the being compliant, not to stir the hornet's nest type of narrative. Now, I can understand why someone in his position would say something like this, because he's such a high profile guy. His company, is a big company. He can easily be shut down or coerced at any given moment in time. And maybe he has, who knows, and that's why he's sort of like toning down the message just to play it smart, maybe knowing in the back end that it's not going to make a difference anyhow. Fundamentally, what's important, the message that's important here, is that Bitcoin was created to replace the legacy system. There is no denying this. It was not created in any way, shape, or form to extend the lifeline of the legacy system. And to replace the legacy system means you have to give up all the bad habits associated with that garbage, right? Which means learning new skills, learning to accept that now you are the head of security, you are your own bank, you're going to have to learn new skills. And for the first time in the history of humanity, understand that now you can own your money. You don't need it to be printed by a government. You don't need it to be issued by a government. You don't need to be babysat by a government for your money. That's fundamentally what it is. And there's a lot of players in the space, including Michael Saylor to a certain degree, that seem to want to extend that lifeline to accommodate whatever purpose. Now, Michael Saylor has plans now that have been publicly made available. He wants to do his own bank. So of course it's in his best interest to start spinning that narrative, because now it suits his business. And in all fairness, even as a Bitcoin maxi, I genuinely know that a lot of people are not going to custody their own funds for whatever reason, whether it's laziness, stupidity, whatever their reason may be, they won't do it, at least initially, until they run into a problem of a certain magnitude that destroys them to a certain level that will force them to change their mindset about this. So from a business perspective, Michael Saylor may have a very good point that there's a large percentage of the population that are just incapable or unwilling to do self-custody, and he is going to vacuum clean them all into his model and make a fortune out of them. Fair enough, it's a free market. But for him to come out and say that anyone who wants to take self-custody is somehow a bad person or anti-government or anti-this or anti-that, that's a bit ludicrous. Even hardcore Bitcoiners are not anti-government. They are anti-government in the current state of the government, which is acting as an enemy of the people, right? If government was in a form that we were taught that it should be, where it serves the people and rights and freedoms were respected and protected, you wouldn't have such a hostile reaction. But when you start going after people, well, you can expect that at a certain point, you're going to get some pushback. And you can, you also have to remember that Michael Saylor comes from a financially privileged standpoint. He hasn't lived through an annihilation of life savings of an entire country, including his own. Had he walked through in these shoes, I don't think he'd be so casual and chill about promoting, yeah, how good it is to be, you know, to extend the life system of the legacy system and to continue all this nonsense. I don't think he'd have that same spin, that same message. But since he hasn't, and hopefully he doesn't, because I don't wish that upon anyone, your view on life changes very quickly, very dramatically, once you experience the extremities of corruption. So if you don't think that a 6102 type scenario can and will happen to custodians of Bitcoin, you are drunk beyond any form of reason, because I believe that not only is it confirmed, it is coming. And so this is how people are going to lose a lot of money. They're going to think Bitcoin is a scam. Bitcoin is, it has nothing to do with this. It's Bitcoin was co-opted, stolen, corrupted, destroyed, attempted to be destroyed by the same bunch of crooks and criminals that are trying to remain relevant in the current legacy system. This is what's going to happen. And this is when those people that are unwilling to learn how to do proper Bitcoin self-custody today, that's when they're going to start paying attention to it, unfortunately, after they get completely decimated. So that's my take on it. You don't need heroes in Bitcoin.
Yeah, and that's
you don't need Saylor. You don't need anyone. You just need to read the white paper, understand that for the first time in history, you can own your money. You just have to learn how. There are good teachers out there. We can help you. But if you think you're going to take a shortcut by relying on someone else because you're buying into their false advertising and marketing that is preying on your ignorance and fears, well, my friend, I think you're in for a rude awakening, you know, much sooner than you think.
Yeah, that's well said. We've spent a lot of time on this. So let's talk about some of these crooks and criminals and their opinions of Bitcoin. Turtemeester had a great post. So the ECB claims that early Bitcoin adopters steal economic value from latecomers. And basically, instead of saying, hey, don't be a latecomer, you should buy some Bitcoin, they assume a scenario in which Bitcoin's value continues to appreciate and its effect on society. And I'd encourage anyone to go check out this thread from Tur. It's interesting. But Rick, this is relatively close to home for you. I guess you're a hop, skip, and a jump away from the ECB. But what's your initial reaction to these comments?
Well, I mean, you know, let's start off with the clear fact that the ECB is a criminal organization filled with some of the most despicable crooks you're ever likely to come across. I mean, if anyone, I think most of our listeners are in the US, right? If you don't know a lady called Christine Lagarde, I would go and Google her. You might find some news articles about how she's been found guilty of all sorts of things, but somehow maintains her position at the ECB. But yeah, I mean, what it's such a ridiculous paper that they've come out with. Basically, the argument there is that early adopters of Bitcoin will do financially well, right, as the value increases. But this is only at the expense of everybody else. But what the ECB failed to mention and don't talk about at all is, well, hang on, why is Bitcoin appreciating in value? And what is Bitcoin appreciating in value against? And the answer is, it's appreciating in value against the euro, the dollar, and all the other fiat currencies. And why is that? Well, that's because the European Central Bank and the Federal Reserve keep printing these currencies into oblivion, which makes them worth less and less and less. So actually, is it Bitcoin that's impoverishing these people, or is it actually the ECB themselves that are impoverishing everybody? Right? And Bitcoin is just a symptom of that. That's a symptom of people trying to escape into a system where there isn't a small group of cronies who can print money whenever they want and debase their purchasing power. So the fact that the euro is a failed experiment is not Bitcoin's fault. In fact, you know, perhaps Bitcoin wouldn't even exist if it weren't for the absolute mess that they've made with our money, right? You know, that like Satoshi only came up with this idea based on the fact that this is how our current financial system works, right? Without the need, maybe he'd have gone and built something entirely different. Who knows? And the article goes on to say that, you know, they want to either make it disappear altogether, or tax it extremely heavily to avoid division in society. And I'm like, hang on a minute. These guys, right? I mean, they're either out of their mind or just completely crooked. Because if you look at the wealth distribution of the world today, 99% of the world's wealth is in 1% of the people's hands. So here's an article from these lunatics, right? Suggesting that Bitcoin is going to create this wealth disparity and everyone's going to be upset about it. My response to that would be, no, there was a wealth disparity that you created, and we're all very upset about it now, and that is why we Bitcoin, right? You created the wealth disparity, and everything you're saying in here is just complete and utter bullshit, right? And also, I saw someone else write about this on Twitter, right? So I don't want to take any credit for this idea, and I can't remember who posted it, but I thought, what a brilliant analogy. Some guy tweeted something about, can you imagine if they came out and said something like this about like Microsoft stock, right? And said, oh, everyone that bought like Amazon stock or something like early on, well, they're getting really rich now based on this. So we have to stop the price of Amazon stock climbing and make all these interventions. It's wild. I mean, basically, I think what should be plainly obvious now is like these guys, they know their grift is up. They know that we've all figured out that they print money for free and impoverish us to benefit them. And this paper basically says, uh-oh, Bitcoin gives everybody a way out. And that means the end of our little scam. And yeah, well, I'm sorry. I mean, what a great advert for Bitcoin. The whole paper talks about how it's going to be worth an absolute monster amount of money in the future, which I guess suggests the euro is definitely going to die. So yeah, these people are writing love letters to their own demise, and I'm all for it. Like keep crying, cry harder, really sorry. You know, you've basically, the entire article, what they've written, they could have summed up by just saying, hi, we are the ECB, and we're going to have fun staying poor. And it's like, this is not news. We've been saying that for 10 years, you know. Anyway, those guys, waste of time.
That was going to be my observation, was the wealth gap that they've created through money printing by virtue of the Cantillon effect. And now they're blaming Bitcoin. Tony.
In the famous words of Sean Connery, losers always whine about their best. And that's exactly what the ECB is doing. They're crying over the mess that they've created and somebody else has found a solution for. What did you expect? You steal from people long enough, you bully them hard enough, at some point someone's going to give you the finger and tell you enough is enough and find a solution to put an end to your scam. And that's precisely why Bitcoin was born. All these attacks are expected, and you can expect them to get even more ludicrous and even more extreme as, you know, as their product, that worthless fiat paper, continues to go to zero. You can expect all sorts of shenanigans and fancy reports to come out. Best thing to do, just ignore it all. It's complete rubbish. These people mean nothing. They are the reason why we're in this catastrophic global economic mess. The last people you want to listen to or take advice from are these thieves. Just ignore them. Learn how to Bitcoin. Learn how to hold it in self-custody. You'll be just fine. And they've confirmed it for you. They even tell you that they're worried that it's going to become worth $10 million or 10 million euros, and that's not fair. Well, boo-hoo, you know, go take an aspirin, you'll feel better.
So in the interest of time and avoiding redundancy, let's just hit this one quickly because it's another central bank attacking Bitcoin. So the Minneapolis Fed joins the ECB, and their concern, and this is just laughable, is that they want a prohibition against Bitcoin, or at the very least, massive taxes on Bitcoin, so they can restore unique implementation of permanent primary deficits. In other words, they would be forced to balance the budget if on a Bitcoin stand. Like, you can't make this stuff up. Like, I don't even know what to say about this, but give a quick comment. Tony, why don't you take this one first?
I'm telling you, it's so ludicrous that you can't place a vocabulary word to describe it. They're upset that they can't steal from you anymore. That's really what it comes down to. They're pissed that now you have an option that puts an end to their shenanigans. And so, of course, they're going to say all sorts of rubbish. Man, just like the ECB thing, just ignore these people. Just the best thing you can do is to ignore them. There's no sense fighting them head on. It's a lose-lose scenario no matter which way you look at it. Opt out, hold your funds in self-custody. Once they're there, no one can touch them. No one can take them away from you. They can try to come up with, you know, threatening messages. I'm going to tax this and tax that. You can't tax anything that you don't own, first of all, and that is not in your control. And if you harass people long enough, either they're going to fight you back at some point, or they're just going to leave, which is a lose-lose scenario, whichever way you look at it.
Rick?
Wow, it's just funny, isn't it? Yeah, like, very, very upset that they can't keep printing. They're very upset that they can't keep counterfeiting money. Right, which, well, yeah, you know, if I can't sit there and print money out of thin air, I might be upset too, because that's a sweet gig. And then to go on to say, and that means we're going to have to live within our means. Oh no, can you imagine having not being able to spend money that you haven't got? I don't know how these people are going to cope, but I mean, I love it, right? What better dose of entertainment than watch these criminals just scream into the void as they watch their grasp on the money control disappear? I love it. I absolutely love it. Like, I might print some of these out and stick them up around my office and stuff like that. They're that good.
On a bad day, you just have a quick laugh. So last one, everyone's favorite politician, Elizabeth Warren. So corporate greed is a big reason the prices have gone up. Hey, to her credit, she said it's a big reason. So it's a stupid reason that she gives, but she just said it's a big reason. She didn't say it's the only reason, which I guess leaves room for, you know, I don't know, $6 trillion of stimulus during COVID. But she says that they need to crack down on corporations and bring costs down. I wasn't aware that just in the last 2 years, corporations had become greedy. I assumed that they'd always been greedy. And I was curious why prices haven't been high, you know, higher and higher forever and ever. Rick, what are your reactions to good old Liz?
Oh, Liz Warren. I mean, she's not the first politician to come out with this kind of nonsense, right? But she continuously beats this drum. And I think we've got to address it because, like, it's not just a difference of opinion. It's like actual misinformation bullshit, right? Like we need to, like, you know how they always, like, accuse all of us of misinformation? I mean, this is just utter nonsense. You'll notice, by the way, that whenever she talks about this stuff, she never talks about their margins. Right. Like, if you really want to demonstrate to me that this is like corporate greed or whatever you call it, then, you know, show me how these margins have changed and by what factor. And the other thing is, like, I'm a capitalist. Right. So things are worth what people are willing to pay for them. Right. So, look, you know, you can't just decide if you're a business owner one day, like, oh, I'm going to charge. You know, let's say I make pizzas, right? I can't decide one day I'm going to wake up in the morning and be like, I feel greedy today. I'm going to go and charge $10,000 per pizza, right? Because there wouldn't be a market for it. Nobody would come and buy it, right? And other people would be able to compete against me and undercut my price and sell pizzas at a reasonable price, and I would lose all my business. I don't know what Warren's trying to suggest. Is she suggesting that all the pizza makers got together, you know, in this example, and all agreed that the price needs to be really high? Is she saying that all grocery stores are not competing anymore, but actually colluding and price fixing? I mean, the whole thing's nonsense, and capitalism works this out. You try and charge too much and the product isn't worth enough, then you're going to lose your market. No one's going to buy it, right? The market decides what things are worth. And, you know, in a capitalist society, right, you don't come in and start doing price fixing or anything like this. Like, you can't, in a free market, you have to let companies charge whatever they want. You can't just sit at the sidelines like a crazy communist and start screeching at people that, you know, and I mean, let's get back to grocery stores as well. Like, what are the profit margins there? 1%, 2%, 3%, like notoriously razor thin, anyone who's worked in retail. So she's just full of it. She desperately doesn't want you to know that inflation is caused by money printing. And that's why the cost of everything around you has gone up. And it's because the money's broken, because it just it shows you who the real culprit is. And that's not what they want, right?
Yeah, you hit on an important point, is that people often look at nominal profits and they say, look, they're, you know, X billion dollars of profit versus last year, and it's so much more. And they don't look at profit margins. And they also don't look at the decreased purchasing power of the of those nominal profits. The, I mean, the reason is the money printing, the you know, billion that you made this year versus the half a billion that you made last year is comparably valuable, you know, like, it's the purchasing power has been so vastly diminished over such a short period of time. Tony, do you have any comments on Google Liz?
Well, you guys have pretty much covered it all. But I mean, of all the people that hates the American people, I think she's at the very top of that list. She genuinely disrespects almost everyone in the United States because nothing she says is true. Like, she gaslights you all the time. She lies to you all the time. She is the number one source of misinformation and bullshit that, you know, I've ever heard in recent months. So, you know, if you have half a brain, just again, like, you don't waste your time and energy on those, you know, don't have your best interests in mind. And she is definitely on the top of that list. It's really absolutely disgusting to watch and to listen to. And I hope the American people, you know, react, you know, positively to this by voting her out permanently, once and for all.
I think she's on the ballot this in a couple of weeks, so hopefully that's the case. Gentlemen, thank you guys for your time, for everyone listening. If you feel like we made a compelling case for self-custody, you got to check out the Bitcoin Way. Go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We can help walk you through this process step by step. You will be confident, comfortable with your custody arrangement, and you'll sleep with peace of mind. We also help with privacy phones, online privacy. Check out our YouTube channel. We've got a great video where Tony shares his thoughts on the importance of a Plan B residency, which is something that we can offer and help facilitate. We'd love to see you again. It's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Schedule 30 minutes free. Chat with our team and learn more. Gentlemen, thank you guys so much for your time. This was a fun, wild one. Lots of crazy news, but always have a blast chatting with you.
Absolutely, man. Thanks, Michael.
Cheers, guys.